Welcome back to Four of a Kind podcast, where you will learn from real life experiences of amazing women and male allies too, who support our mission to increase women's representation in business leadership. You will hear from founders, investors, startups, corporate leaders, and our own journeys too. We want this podcast to empower you to go start that business, take that big job, and do it with confidence. So join us and exciting guests, and let's figure out what we can do to get there. Hi, everyone. This is Kelsey.
And this is Grace.
And welcome to this week's episode. Today, we are talking with another amazing female entrepreneur, Shruti Joshi. Shruti is currently the CEO and co-founder of Compelled, an application that changes the way we experience and share authentic personal recommendations. Grace and I both met Shruti through her sister, Shilpa, a great friend of ours from business school. Hi, Shilpa. And another just quick anecdote, Shruti has been kind enough to talk with me about some of my own career goals and transitions, especially when I was looking for a new job. She just gave great advice. I still remember that conversation as being one of the first ones where I felt like I actually came out of it with a potential path forward. So always be grateful for that.
Yeah, we're super excited. Excited to have Shruti on the show, and it's also extra special because this also happens to be our 1 year anniversary special episode. So Shruti, welcome to the show.
Thank you. I'm so honored.
So Shruti has built a reputation for driving efficient growth for companies of all sizes. She's an entrepreneur, advisor to several companies, a mother, an angel investor. So basically all around superstar. She began her career at Verizon Communications with roles in strategy and marketing, eventually becoming the executive director of consumer marketing. She was also a partner at a consulting firm called Altman Velandry and Company. And then she went on to found Sidecar Holdings before eventually starting Compelled. She has an MBA from Columbia Business School and a BS in business from the University of Southern California. And to round it all off, Shruti holds board positions with a number of organizations, including T-Vision Insights, Facet Wealth, Syntactics, and the David Lynch Foundation.
So diving right in, Shruti, can you give us a little more color, your career? I know Grace just walked through the high highlights and, you know, the resume bullets, but especially those pivot points in your career, you were moving from corporate America to consulting to startup.
Yes, happy to do that. So I did start my career at Verizon Communications, and I feel so fortunate for that experience because coming right out of undergrad, Verizon provided recent grads an amazing marketing management development program where they rotated you from, you know, one part of the organization to another, you different parts of the country. And in addition, they gave me the opportunity to manage people 2 years out of school. So I had a sales team that I was responsible for. Just that first 2 years of my career, I felt were amazing, just to have that type of exposure to so many different areas of an organization. And it was the craziest year, by the way. Managing people when you're 22 years old was just not really that enjoyable, but probably one of the best experiences I can say I had in my career.
Yeah.
So after finishing that program, I ended up placing into an advertising group in New York City. I had decided early on that I really wanted to, in the beginning of my career, acquire all of the skills necessary to be a CMO of a large organization. And that's just what I did. I ended up working in all of the different parts of the various P's of marketing. I worked in advertising and product promotion and media. I really tried to just amass a huge number of skills. And then interestingly enough, 4.5 years after my first 4 years at Verizon, I got this little itch, always had this entrepreneurial bug, and a small startup called looking for a director of marketing. And I felt really curious, and I felt like things in the larger organization at Verizon were just a little slower. So I actually ended up leaving Verizon 4.5 years in, and I worked for a product innovation consulting firm. And I don't talk about this very much because it was just a couple of years, but it was an incredible experience where I had the chance to help a lot of consumer packaged goods companies develop new products. And that really required a different skill set in terms of observing consumers and looking for things and workarounds and coping strategies, and then helping define and develop products that would those needs. So 2 years after doing that and having quite a bit of success in that role, Verizon ended up calling me and they said, hey, you know, we've invested $17 billion in a fiber network. Come back. We'll help pay for business school. And that was such an amazing opportunity. I ended up going back to Verizon because because it was just a different company at that time. They had a video service that they were launching. They were taking Fios into market. They wanted help with a lot of the customer acquisition in that space. So I went back and ended up moving through the organization pretty rapidly and overseeing the consumer marketing organization and customer acquisition, which was a dream job for a marketer with a huge budget and a big organization, a lot of challenges and a sales target and a marketing call target, online visit target on my back every single day. It was very intense, but I learned so much. And one of the things that I really developed a competency around was both digital and using analytics to make better investment allocation decisions. And so after successfully reducing the cost of acquisition, which was a huge part of my charter, and helping drive Fios penetration to over 35%, I started to become restless and antsy, and that entrepreneurial bug came back. But what was different this time around was that I had amassed a set of skills that I felt were very useful in the marketplace to other marketers, because just being able to use analytics to make better decisions just felt like it was going to be a thing that was here to stay. And so I had worked with a consulting firm called Altman Valandry & Company, and they had a bright team of people that were using some of the latest statistical methodologies to solve really complex problems. And I worked with them to help solve a problem around my budget, which was, how do I know how to invest the next dollar and get the best return on my investment by market, by tactic? And I had about 85 tactics and channels that we used at the time. And this project ended up becoming a huge success. And so this idea dawned on me that, you know, this doesn't really exist. This could be a service. It could be software that senior marketing executives use to make better investment allocation decisions, because it wasn't really work that the ad agencies were doing in depth. And so I ended up speaking with them, and I just decided that there was just this itch or this longing to, before I celebrated 10 years at Verizon, to go do something more entrepreneurial, because that was always what I wanted to do. And so I ended up looking into a few different opportunities, and this, you know, the opportunity to join Altman Valandry & Company and build out a practice area dedicated to marketing analytics just really spoke to me at the time. It was very entrepreneurial. It leveraged a lot of what I knew, and it gave me a lot of freedom and creativity to build solutions that other folks that were in my shoes needed. And so I ended up leaving and joining Altman Valandry & Company and doing just that, building out that practice area. And I was there for about 7-8 years, ended up becoming a significant source of revenue for the company, and had a tremendous number of clients that really benefited from the software and the management consulting services. And then again, that itch came, and it just became this thing where you start to really know yourself, and you start to know what you need and what you need to do at different points in time. And so that next pivot point was, you know, I've really amassed an amazing number of skills over the last, you know, whatever years it had been at that point. And I really would love to put all of this knowledge and energy into not just helping corporations grow, but what if we could solve a consumer problem? Or what if I could solve a problem that would really help people in some capacity? And from that, I decided to sell my equity in AV Co. and pursue other areas that might be more rewarding and personally fulfilling.
That's all so fascinating. I think we talk a lot about entrepreneurship, and I think people immediately think about startups. And obviously, you have that experience, which we'll definitely get into. But what's interesting is how you found all of these pockets of entrepreneurial type work within larger organizations to have opportunities to scratch the itch, so to say, but also get some experience. And it doesn't always need to be a one-man startup or one-woman startup, but some opportunities that came along at Verizon, or especially when the product offerings were changing so dramatically, and then to build out a practice within an existing consulting organization. That's just really interesting that there were a lot of different ways for you to be entrepreneurial.
Yeah, I think that's a very fair observation. And I think it's very much the case in this day and age, right? Because innovation is such a part of any organization. And if you're not constantly launching new products or evolving the way your technology is used, you're not going to be relevant, really. Things are moving so fast. And so I think those opportunities to be entrepreneurial within companies of any size has just never been better. You have so many chances to find yourself into those, I guess they call them entrepreneurial jobs.
Yeah. And I think I mentioned this to you when Shilpa and I crashed your family brunch, that I'm currently building a brand new business unit at my firm. So I feel like we need a completely separate conversation on this topic and pick your brain a little bit on your experience building a practice within, you know, a large company.
Yeah, totally. No, I remember that. And the work you were doing sounded so interesting. And there are so many skills that you do gain that are highly transferable into other parts of your career, whether you end up doing something like completely from scratch or moving into another organization that's trying to do something similar.
Well, speaking of entrepreneurship, we'd love to dive into Compelled. I read another interview that you gave, I believe, where you were described as an experience collector, which I thought was a fascinating term, and I really want to be one. So I downloaded Compelled, so I'm starting my lists, but I'll let you explain that more. But anyway, I'd love to know how that experience collector led you or potentially led you to start Compelled. So could you provide some background on the company, what it's about, and then how it got started?
Absolutely. So I think the first thing to say about the Compelled story is it starts from when I was born. I was raised by entrepreneurs and adventurers, and they moved a ton and they traveled a ton. I think when I was a year and a half, they put me in the back of a car and drove all through Europe. So I think that's definitely in my blood. And I recall my parents saying things like, don't just read about it, you know, go and see it, go and do it, go and feel it. And so that it has had such a profound impact on who I am as a person. But I think if we fast forward, I was going through a really tough personal time. And I wasn't really being true to some of those values that, you know, I just shared with you that my parents instilled in me in terms of going out, seeing things, doing things, learning things. And I was working a ton. It was just insane hours. And I really kind of got lost. I wasn't going out and experiencing all of what New York City had to offer. I feel like I wasn't connected to people. I was just sort of in this hole. And I remember in my journey to get out of it, I talked to a friend of mine and I just thought, I have to get out of town. Let's just book a trip. And I hadn't traveled for a bit. And so we went on a trip to Italy. And we went down to the Amalfi Coast. And I remember sitting at this amazing restaurant. It was a rooftop restaurant in a hilltop town above Sorrento. And it was a beautiful night. There was pasta and wine, and you could hear Italian being spoken in the background. It was a very local spot. The food was insane. And I just had this moment of just the haze kind of lifted. And I was like, I felt alive. And I felt so good about being in that moment. And I hadn't really felt that for a while. It just felt really, really good. And there was this realization I had that experiences really have the power to transform us. And from that trip, I really felt recharged and renewed. And it pulled me out of this slightly dark phase that I was going through. And it also led to a series of changes that I ended up making when I came back. And one of those things was obviously to really get back to my roots of doing things. And so I ended up becoming a crazy traveler again. I ended up maximizing the city, whether it was a cup of coffee at a new coffee shop down the street or checking out, you know, a little string quartet at a jazz bar or whatever. Like, it was just doing all the things that excited me and interested me. And so from that, everyone started asking me for recommendations. And the second thing that kind of happened was that I couldn't remember the name of that restaurant in Sorrento. I still don't know the name of that restaurant because it was something that I got from a friend of a friend in Sorrento, in that area. I have no idea. I spent 30 hours looking for it. And so this whole kind of experience, the takeaway was that this is just a tremendous amount of work. Giving people recommendations, keeping track of the things you want to do, remembering the places you've been because you want to share those experiences with people you care about. It just had to be easier. And what I started to do was I started to research. And what I really found was that everybody was having this problem. And some of the things that people were doing is they felt like they couldn't really trust the internet. Things were sponsored or paid for review-wise. They were looking at 10 different websites and cross-referencing recommendations to see what the consistent things were. I was doing that. It was a lot of time.
That's literally what I do. And then I have a ridiculous Excel spreadsheet and everyone rolls their eyes. They're like, yeah, that's not helpful. It's, I mean, or maybe it's helpful, but they don't want to read it.
Yeah. And the other thing that I realized that I was doing and everybody was doing was taking screenshots. I had 3,000 screenshots of, you know, Instagram posts and browser tabs. I have like 1,000 browser tabs open, not anymore, but I used to, emailing stuff to myself to read. And I think the point was that it was never there when I needed it, right? You do all these things, but then when that moment arises, you're going to Italy or you're ready for dinner on a Friday night, you're like, where did I put that thing? And I think when it comes to sharing, which is such an important part of being human and connecting with your friends and people that you care about, I was texting these recommendations when I was asked for them. I was doing shared docs and Excel sheets and recreating them for different people over and over and over again. Mm-hmm. And I was giving them just text. And so it just, all of this realization, it just felt like there just had to be a better way. And I think the biggest nugget was that in all of that research, my best experiences came from recommendations from people I trusted and from friends. And so it was really like, can't we just make this whole system easier? Can't we just extract all the stuff that's happening in text and in voice conversations and put it in an environment, give it a home, give it a platform to really solve a lot of these issues because everyone's facing them and time is the premium and it's taking so much time and work to just experience things in life and it should be easier. And that's really where Compel starts. And that's really the problems that we seek to solve.
I love it. All of the problems you listed are my problems.
I was going to say the same thing. I mean, I even remember when I was filling out, I think one of the surveys that your sister Shilpa sent around to validate your hypothesis around, you know, the need or problem that Compelled is trying to solve. I just remember like literally clicking and agreeing to every single pain point. I'm like, yep, yep. I've done this and I've done that. And I wish there was a solution for all this, which I mean, at the time I didn't realize there was a company being created out of that survey. So fast forward today, there we go. Here's Compelled. So what were some of the biggest hurdles or setbacks that you encountered when you were first starting up?
Yeah, you know, it's funny because I think most of the hurdles would be myself. I think it's just your own fear of failure for me. To the point where Compelled started, I've had the fortune of some incredible opportunities and have put in a lot of hard work, but have always had the benefit of getting the next amazing opportunity. And I think when you decide to do something like this, there's no safety net. I think this is probably one of the differences in being an entrepreneur versus an entrepreneur.
Right.
You know, you really don't have a safety net at all. And you're putting yourself in a position to be fully responsible. I think that's also very exciting, but I think there's definitely a fear component that comes with it. The second for me is asking for help, which I'm becoming better at, but I'm not great at. I think it requires you to show a vulnerability. And I think that's really hard for me. But like most things in life, it's a challenge and you either rise to it or you don't. And I think being comfortable asking for help is something that I've had to do a lot of in this situation. I think the third thing is probably being okay with putting something out that isn't in quotes perfect. And I know that there's no such thing as perfect. Maybe this is just consumer tech or perhaps it's really entrepreneurship more broadly. But I think when you work on product and other environments, it can feel really kind of good and done. I think in this situation, I've had to grow comfortable with putting out a beta that has flaws and knowing it, being okay with people not judging me that that's the best I can do, but understanding that this is a journey that we're on to help solve the problem for our users. Those are probably the three things. And I think having a baby in the middle of all of that didn't really, that was a challenge.
No big deal.
Exactly. Yes. But I think it's your own brain that gets in the way.
And I mean, I think both Kelsey and I can speak for the entire Four of a Kind podcast. Those things resonate with us because I think really that first step is probably the hardest of us even starting this podcast and also publishing the first one, releasing the first one, because we listen to it and we're like, we sound really weird. Why did I say that word? Or it's not ready yet. Do it over. And the beginning part is really scary. So those things, those hurdles are definitely something that resonate well with us and something that we've heard from a lot of other entrepreneurs.
Yeah. I think that is something that's probably very consistent. It's really a mental toughness journey.
One thing, I feel like I'm always quoting a book, but I have a good one from a book I read. is the autobiography that Bob Iger wrote, who's the CEO of Disney. And one of the things that really jumped out at me, which talks about perfection, and he believes in the pursuit of perfection, but not perfection itself, to the extent it's a journey and a mindset rather than a product. So there's not a perfect product, but there Right. is a mindset about constantly striving basically to be better rather than being comfortable with, I mean, not even mediocre. Maybe it's good, but not thinking about how, well, when I get the feedback after putting this out and then I can improve it and then I can do, you know, version 2.0 and 3.0 and constantly thinking about how to serve my customer. Thought that was a really interesting way to distinguish between the two.
I think that's a great way to think about it. And there was another piece of advice that I too read that Reid Hoffman said, which really has gotten me through a lot of the instances in which I have to put something out that I'm like, okay, I know this could be better. And that is, if you're not embarrassed by the first version of your product, then you started too late. So I like that. And I think it's true. You know, if you think about any product you use, especially in the technology space, first version of it is nothing remotely like the current version of it, right? So
right.
I think you just have to go and let people tell you what they need and watch what they're doing or not doing to kind of find out what they need in instances where they can't tell you and figure it out along the way.
So I know you talked a little bit about what were some of the hardest parts of starting Compelled and starting your own business. Can you share a little bit about the parts of this journey where you've felt like you've really been able to draw on your previous experience?
Yeah, so I would say because of a big part of my career being all about helping companies drive efficient growth, that is probably the consistent skill set that I've built over the years. I think so much of that applies. So building a brand from scratch and the importance of understanding your user and taking the time to speak with them and talk to them and survey them and watch them do the things they're doing and the workarounds that they have. I think I have definitely applied all of those best practices to building out Compelled. So spent so much time really making sure we understood the user and their needs and what they were doing. So it wasn't just my experience or my colleagues' experiences. It was really the general population. And then I think I would say the approach to growth has been something that I've been able to port over, right? How do you actually drive customer acquisition? And how do you think about that challenge in a world where you have a constrained budget? That's definitely been something that I've been able to port over along with, you know, knowledge of digital and social. And then one of the things I think I really learned at, I would say, Verizon, and especially as a consultant, is packaging and selling ideas. So, you know, you're always sharing a narrative and you're always trying to convince other people to want to follow you in organizations like Verizon. And as a consultant, you're packaging and selling your ideas to help a client with a particular problem or set of issues. And success is usually when they adopt that and implement it, and then they see success. And so I do think a lot of those skills poured over, because although your audiences are different, you're talking to VCs or investors, you're very much in a situation where you have to generate that energy and go outbound with that story to get people to be interested. And I think that's probably one of the biggest differences, actually, as an aside, but from being in a corporation. A lot of the activity comes to you when you're an executive at a big corporation. You don't have to generate the energy to go outbound. The outbound skill set that I've been able to transfer here was largely developed at Altman Bollandry & Company as a partner. You know, I had to grow that practice. So you have to figure out, how are you going to get out there and share your message and make people want to pay attention? And so I think those skills that you can learn in different ways in different places, those are probably the most critical when you're trying to get something off the ground.
I think not just from, you know, raising funding perspective, but really running your company, a strong team is super critical, right, to successfully building and scaling a startup. How did you meet your co-founder and how did you know he'd be a great partner for this venture?
Yeah, so we're introduced by a gentleman named Pete Kim, who's the CEO of a company called Mighty Hive. And Pete and I were talking about what I wanted to work on next. And this was, you know, now about 2 or 3 years ago. And I talked to him about the vision for Compelled in the very early days and some of the problems and the research that we were working on. And he immediately said, John Bae Hwang. I just was like, okay, like, what is that?
You know? What is that?
And he's like, have you met or have I introduced you to John Bae Hwang? And I said, no. And Pete is super energetic. So when he, you know, he's John Bae Hwang, like you just sort of pay attention. And so he proceeded to tell me that he was, you know, good friends with an engineer who was really looking to solve the recommendation problem and the desire for more authentic and personal recommendations. And I was looking at the time for a CTO co-founder. And so he set us up to meet and we met in New York City. He had just left Google because the company he was with was acquired by Google. He launched Google Hire and then left. And he was unemployed at that point. And yeah. He was just not really, timing was not really right. Like he was interested in the idea, but he had just left. And then a year and a half later, I reached back out to him when Compelled really kind of started to come together and heat up. And I just said, look, kind of where are you and what are you thinking? I enjoyed our chat. We started talking and the timing was right. And he came on board last March. So that is how we met. It was through a mutual, a mutual contact friend / former business associate of ours.
That's amazing. I always find it so interesting to hear about how founders meet because I think a lot, at least from founders I've met or I've talked to, it's always not a completely chance encounter, but there's always this introduction or like a meeting or some sort of events and you know, you have a good chat and you just click and you just know you can work with this person.
Totally. And he's great. And we have so much fun. You know, we're working on something that we are both so passionate about and it feels so enjoyable and think we're very complementary from a skill set standpoint. And I think that makes a really big difference because we seek each other's opinion and advice. And I think there's a lot of natural stakeholdering that happens, not for any political reasons, but truly because, you know, we're collaborating. And it's been great. In fact, Pete and I talked the other day and he asked me, how's it going? And I was like, you know, it's really great. Yeah, it is interesting how talking to people and asking for help really pays off.
Yeah, so I know you touched on customer acquisition earlier. How are you or how have you reached your initial beta users for Compelled? And what is, if you can provide like a brief overview of what the strategy looks like for going to market full force and reaching your target users?
Yeah, so this is something that we've spent a lot of time thinking about, and this strategy will evolve over time. I think right now I have a pretty strong opinion that I do not want to spend any money on customer acquisition because mm-hmm. it's really about finding the right users out the gate and letting those users bring other users in. So, you know, for a consumer technology platform, virality and network effects are really important. And you want those things to be present. And if they're not, you want to adjust to figure out how to make those things present. So what we've done is we have spent so much time, I can't even tell you how much time, on refining our target audience and talking to our target audience. And it's really just the most important thing to do and figuring out how our message solves their need or why they should pay attention to that.
Yeah.
And so defining that ideal user that is suffering the most, right, from the pain points we discussed,
right,
has been sort of where we've started our targeting. And then doing an outreach to them, what we really wanted to do is feature their stories. So if anyone goes on to compelled.com, we have a Finder's Keeper section that features select connoisseurs. And we don't feature all of our users. We feature some of our users, some of the users that are already making recommendations at scale and that people really turn to that also demonstrate the values of our brand, right? That exploration, mm-hmm. the desire to experience new things, the belief that experiences are transformational, even if they're small, you know, seemingly insignificant things like buying a cup of coffee or going for a walk in an area of town you haven't been, whatever it may be. And handpicking those people, we wanted to share their stories and allow their recommendations to be delivered in a way that is way better than the ways that they were doing it. So we're trying to solve their issues, gain feedback, and let them share with their audiences. And we have seen that a lot of that is working. And even if we don't feature a connoisseur and we just bring on through conversation or outreach a set of people that seem to embody the characteristics of our ideal user, those people end up sharing as well mm-hmm. to their communities. And everybody knows, right? That friend in a community that always knows the best restaurant,
yeah.
keeps the Excel sheet.
AKA Kelsey.
I know. I have heard. I'm dying to see the Excel sheet, actually. So I think that finding those people has been really the strategy, right? Because not only do you get the best feedback in a beta stage of your product to make it better and make it work for that ideal audience, so you know you're solving for the right issues for the right people, but those people end up talking if it's a good experience, or more importantly, in our case, they're sharing their recommendations with Compelled, which naturally brings in other people. So that's really been where we're focusing right now. We've done testing in more traditional digital channels for paid, and we are 100% certain we can generate new users on paid media for very little. I think even our out the gate costs were way lower than industry benchmarks. So that's not really our issue. It's really nailing the product and the product market fit and getting those people to start talking about this product. So that's kind of where we're focused right now.
That makes sense. It's almost like full circle to the underlying concept that you were talking about with experiences and recommendations, that those recommendations that are so valuable are word of mouth. They're passed along from someone you know and trust. So in the same way, as your app grows, the core of recommending something like an experience to someone is so personal in a way.
Yeah, it is. And we talk about it in terms of a life cycle. You know, you discover a piece of content from, you know, one of 100 places, right? And you first need to remember that thing. You need to save it somewhere so that you can go and do it. Then you go and have the experience. And Compelled is a place, obviously, for you to save all of those things from anywhere, any format, photo, screenshot, a link, even places you can search for them in the app. And you can create these lists of things you want to do. Now, when you are ready to do them, Compelled has a bunch of features that resurface the content to you at the right place or time. So you can set a location reminder, or you can hit the nearby tab and see all the places that you've saved around you. And then once you go and do it, you then write notes about that experience. Oh, I love this, you know, order the special sauce, whatever it may be, the tips. And you inevitably end up sharing it with somebody, because that's how we connect. That's all the research we've done shows that as humans, we really connect by sharing recommendations, and it makes us feel really good. That sharing is sort of how we share our stories, how we connect with people. So that life cycle is really what we're trying to tap into.
Yeah, I'm really excited to finish my list, which I kind of started, but it's bars in New York City that serve Moscow mules, real ones, in a copper mug.
I love it. See that? I love that. I love the specificity of that, because that is what makes so unique, right? Like, there's all of these niche, like, random but useful things that people have passions about. Now I know you're passionate about in a copper mug.
Yeah, I mean,
in a copper mug.
That last piece is like super important, and Kelsey can attest to that.
Well, but it is important because it's a huge factor in the experience for you, I'm sure. So yeah, no, I love it when we get these really obscure, and a lot of the lists are really kind of pretty kind of unexpected, which I think is great.
Yeah. I'd also be curious to see who else is out there like me, right? Who are just like, oh, that's not a real Moscow mule. It's not a copper mug.
You can connect. You find the bar where you're all hanging out.
You can follow each other's lists. Exactly.
Well, we're super excited to follow along on Compelled's journey. It's been fascinating so far. But switching gears one last time, we mentioned that you're mom to a wonderful boy, Everett, who I met last month, and he's so full of energy.
Yes.
We're just curious, what have you found works for you and your family to help juggle entrepreneurship and motherhood?
My goodness, this is such a good question, because this is the question I ask myself every day. What could I do better? Well, for one, candidly, I'm not very great at this yet. I'm working on this. I would say that having an incredible nanny has been life-changing. And knowing that, you know, your baby is in good hands and that he's happy and that you have that kind of support, that has been just huge. You know, I think that's like a huge sense of relief. And Ingrid's been in our family and she does so many things to help me out too, beyond just taking care of Everett. I think the second thing, and this is really hard for me, but I'm working on it, and it is being okay with certain things just not being okay. Like, you know, I really, for example, life before Everett, I would cook very healthy meals and I would go and work out every day for an hour. And I had so much freedom to really craft my day in the way that I wanted. And I've had to just sort of let certain things go. I work out 4 times a week now,
maybe five. A couple of those are at home workout and they're maybe 35 minutes. And so I think I've just had to be okay for this period of time with not doing things perfectly. And I am a very type A perfectionist, like my own struggle with myself, but I think it's sort of embracing chaos and used to want everything to be completely tidy in the apartment. And sometimes things are messy and that's fine. I have to just sort of let it go. So I think it's like knowing what to let go of so that you can put your energy into things that matter more. And starting a business takes a lot of energy and you spend so much time thinking about things. And then when you're not thinking about that, you're thinking about preschool applications or, you know, mm-hmm. is your child eating well? And are they, you know, developmentally doing the right things? And are they signed up for the right classes? Like the list is big. So I think it's getting rid of all of the fluffy stuff. And then I'd say the last thing is I do think my husband helps a lot with just creating some time for me and giving me some time to every now and again, meet up with friends, like do my own thing, mm-hmm. go and get a facial, whatever it may be. So creating space for that is really hard. And again, like I am by no means the expert. I spend a lot of time reading what other people do in this area, but these are some of the things that I'm learning. And I think the biggest thing is my mom always reminds me about this. She's like, you can't have everything work at a perfect 10 right now. Figure out the areas where you want to put your energy and just really focus on those. That's probably the biggest thing.
I know. I mean, Grace and I aren't speaking from experience here, but we were phrasing the question as what works for you. I can't imagine there's a perfect right answer for any of this. And it's a journey in and of itself. So just curious how what you've done and maybe something will work for someone else.
I think it's also great for our listeners to hear your authenticity in that answer that, hey, like I haven't gotten all figured out, but here are some of the things that have worked well for me. And I think even hearing that for some of the entrepreneur who are moms, right? And who are also kind of struggling to know that, hey, like, you know, things don't always have to be all perfect.
Oh yeah, no. I mean, I think that's probably the big, I think it's our own pressure that makes it infinitely harder. And yeah, it's totally hard. And there are some weeks when I'm like, how am I going to get through this week? And what am I doing? Like I need 15 more hours in a day. It is very, very hard. But mm-hmm. I tell myself in those days, like, don't think too much, just get through the next thing. And then you have these amazing days where you're like, I love doing what I'm doing. And so that's life, right?
Well, one final question, actually it's three small questions, but now after you've just explained how busy your life is between Everett and the business and family, maybe your answers to some of these questions have changed slightly, but the three questions are, what's your favorite restaurant in New York, accessible price point? What is your favorite non-food or drink thing to do in New York? And do you have a favorite vacation destination?
So the first is Caracas Arepa Bar in the East Village. I don't know if you guys have been there, but
I have not.
It's in my mm-hmm. compelled list.
Okay.
Or I have a compelled list, which is like, if you only can visit 10 places in New York City, go do these things. This is like my New York. And it's on that list. And it's a hole in the wall little place. They have the most amazing arepas. And for gluten-free people, they are gluten-free. And definitely order the traditional and put the sauce on it. And that's also in my notes.
Good to know.
Totally. So that's one. For your second question, I would say it's taking a run up the West Side Highway. Love being on the water. The energy's great. I'm running, which is one of my favorite things to do. Sometimes I throw the baby in the running stroller and do it. And that's literally one of the few moments I feel like I have it all because I'm with the kid doing something I love too. And we're both having fun. And then for my favorite vacation spot, this is the most brutal question you can ask. So many places, but I would have to say that one of my favorite places in the world is London. And it's not one of my favorite trips. Like I would say spending time in Russia or going to Japan, those are some of the most amazing country trips I've been on. But there's something about London that just keeps drawing me back in. And whenever I'm there, I really feel like I'm home. I have so many great memories. And so I will always find an excuse to take a trip to London. And there's just so many things that I enjoy doing there. And I have a London list, of course, in Compelled. My shameless plug.
No, it's perfect. Now I know exactly where to look for all these things. Well, thank you so much for sharing your story with us and inspiring our listeners. I know you've also inspired Gracie and I. So we really thank you for taking the time to be with us today. And it's our birthday episode. So it's very exciting.
Yeah, we'd eat cake and like a Moscow mule and a copper mug.
Exactly. Maybe an arepa.
Exactly.
So what is the best way for our listeners to learn more about Compelled?
Well, you can definitely check out our website, compelled.com, and reach us there, which is compelled.com. And then we are on Instagram at compelled, same spelling. We're on Twitter at compelled now. And you can also reach out to me on LinkedIn. So we're on all of it.
Perfect. Well, thank you again, Shruti. And remember, you can also check out more details from today's episode in the show notes. As always, if you'd like to reach us, send us an email at fourofakindpodcast@gmail.com. That's spelled out F-O-U-R. And follow us on Instagram at fourofakindpodcast for the latest news and updates. And don't forget to hit subscribe and rate us on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts. Have a great weekend, everyone.
Bye.
Bye. Thank you guys for having me.